Hello and welcome to Sigma Sports Presents Matt Stevens Unplugged. And this episode needs no introduction, but I'll do one anyway. Just in time for Paris-Roubaix, we've got a timely episode indeed, because my guest today is none other than Jasper Philipsen. Now, what can I tell you about Jasper? Well, he's a sprinter, one of the fastest finishers in the entire world. Riding for Alpecin De Koenig, that's a shampoo and a window and door manufacturer, but also one of the top World Tour teams in pro cycling. He's won six stages of the Tour de France and the green jersey in 2023 too. He's also a very proud Belgian, and we chat all about Belgian cycling culture from the cobbles to the fans. And he recently won his first ever monument, Milan-San Remo. That was a close sprint, and we chat all about that and how it feels different sprinting after nearly 300 kilometres. Which brings us on nicely to the race this coming Sunday, depending on when you listen to this podcast, of course. Paris-Roubaix. We went into a deep dive previewing that. From training for the classics, to whether Mathieu van der Poel will ride for Jasper or vice versa, or what the team's tactic will be. We also looked into the weather forecast. And of course, we discussed whether Jasper will risk enjoying a delicious Flemish classic energy gel, beef stew, stouffles, whilst tackling the pavé. Interesting. So, plonk yourself in your favourite chair, sit back and enjoy the comfort of not having to endure riding over cobblestones the size of your head, because this is the Jasper Philipsen Paris-Roubaix episode. You know it's that time again, Matt Stevens Unplugged. Podcast. Jasper Philipsen is one of the fastest sprinters in the world. Riding for Alpecin De Koenig, he's won two editions of Brugge de Panne, six stages at the Tour de France, a couple in the Vuelta, and a green jersey in the Tour in 2023 to add to his burgeoning palmares. His recent win at Milan-San Remo elevated him to the rare category of sprinters who can win classics. So, coming into Paris-Roubaix weekend, he must be feeling confident and excited about the prospect of riding around the velodrome in perhaps the best form of his life. I was keen to get a look into the mindset of how a top rider prepares for such a race, how the team plans their tactics, and how it feels to have such a strong teammate in Mathieu van der Poel pulling your lead out. Check it out. Jasper, thank you very much for joining us on Matt Stevens Unplugged. Sorry about how disorganized I am.
No worries.
But before I tell you where I am, whereabouts are you, mate?
I'm at home. Relaxing a little bit before going to hell next Sunday.
Going to hell, blimey. I'm in London. That's the River Thames behind me, just next to the station. I've just come back from Flanders, mate. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I know you were originally down to ride it. No, you didn't. You're focusing on Roubaix. But did you watch it all yesterday? How much did you manage to watch on the television?
Yeah, I watched the last 70K when I got back from training. And then I had a good excuse to be in my sofa all afternoon. so it was actually a really nice race. How I see it, it was one of the hardest Flanders that I've ever seen, actually. It was a crazy race and a nice winner. Of course, I was happy with it.
So you've had an amazing start to the year, haven't you? Both between you both and between the team, you've won the first two monuments of the season. But also, when you look at, you've got a big chance in Roubaix at the weekend. But what I was impressed with, Jasper, as well, before we talk about yourself a bit more, was how the team rode. I mean, because there was a lot of pressure on the team, a lot of pressure on Mathieu. And although one or two riders like Wout weren't there, in one way, you could have said that there was even more pressure on Mathieu to deliver. But I thought the team performance of Alpecin De Koenig was really impressive, especially Jani. Everybody worked so well, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it was clear goal. Of course, we had a really strong leader, and that makes it more easy to put the team in one direction. And also, all right with one goal in mind. I think that's important if everybody dedicates to do his job. And I think the team, they put on a really good roster as well to support 100% Mathieu. Of course, you still need to have the legs to do it, but everybody's motivation and dedication was there. And guys like even Oscar Riesebeek, when they're in a good form, they can do an amazing job for the leaders of the team.
Was there any point at home that you wanted to be there in your mind? I know, because sometimes when you're a racer, you watch a race and you want to be there, but were you a little bit envious? Did you feel that you wanted to be a part of the team, or were you really happy with your decision, or were you torn? How did you feel watching it?
Yeah, as a Belgian guy, you always want to ride Flanders. So for sure, it's always a pity if I'm not there. But I think together with the team, we made the right decision. And the team was obviously strong enough to support Mathieu. So that was also, yeah, the thing that I said to the team, that I also wanted to ride Flanders and 100% supporting Mathieu. But yeah, our other sprinter, Caden Groves, hasn't had the best start of the season yet with a small injury. So he's probably not 100% at the top shape for Skel de Prez. And that's why also we made the decision to swap things around and focus on this on Wednesday.
Okay, okay. And how is the condition? I mean, you've had a great, obviously, you've had three wins this year already. You won Brugge de Panne for the second time just a couple of weeks back. How are you physically feeling ahead of Schelde de Prix and importantly Roubaix?
Yeah, feeling a bit tired actually, but right. I think everybody is. No, but I think it's good. I had a week off racing because doing the classics, it's always doing the races and trying to recover in between, but the races take a lot of load on the body, and it's a bit of an attack on the body as well. You have to get by day after day. And at one point, the stress is too much. You cannot handle it anymore. And you need some longer time off to really get by. And I think this was maybe the right decision also now to have a week off. And also, getting the tiredness a little bit inside of the body and trying to freshen things up and with some other trainings before the other part is coming with a really important race on Sunday as well.
Indeed. Now, before we move on to look at Roubaix a little bit, have you had time to reflect on Milan-San Remo? Because obviously, Jasper, over the last few years, you know, you've been on the ascendancy. You're one of the, if not the quickest rider in the world in the sprint. But to take Milan-San Remo like that, let's be honest, it's changed your career, hasn't it, so far? It really has changed things. And have you had a time to reflect on that and soak it up? Because it is, you know, it's one of the, you're a monument winner. And you've already had a podium in Roubaix last year. But have you had time to properly reflect and digest the enormity of winning that race?
Yeah, but I think in our team, the celebrations are a bit different than typical for our team. We're we're achieving goals and we go on like nothing happened before. We're trying to look further again and trying to have a small chat and a beer with the teammates, but that's it. I think we never, because everything is following so quickly. You see, San Remo was already a few weeks ago, and now we had already Flanders. We had a lot of other classics in between. So it's really hard to really let everything soak in and take time for the moment and enjoy it. Maybe the best one to win is probably Roubaix if you have more time afterwards, if you stop the classics. But I think when I'm after the classics, when I have some time preparing for the tour, we'll have some time as well to enjoy and that sinking.
Yeah, it is interesting that it's you looked at, I mean, the podium that you shared, obviously the work that Mathieu put in, and then the fact that you're on the podium with Michael and with Tade, it was fantastic to, I know there's been one or two people have criticized the fact, and I find it amazing, but to criticize the fact that you guys are really friendly afterwards, but it's like, come on, you know, there are people in sport, sometimes you make friends for life in sport, but it doesn't mean, but on the road, you were trying to destroy each other. I love that. But then afterwards, you can also be friends. I think those two can happen. I can't really see the problem in that. I mean, you wanted to win it. Everybody wants to win that race. And what do you think about people who think there's a problem with you guys at the end of the race, you know, celebrating with each other? I mean, I think it's fine. I just think people need to get a life, really.
I think it's a good thing that there is a real sportsmanship and that everybody, of course, we're racing full gas and everybody's going until the limit, but at the end of the day there can only be one winner. And of course sometimes you're disappointing or it's a disappointment you haven't won, but I think it's a good thing also to appreciate maybe the guy that won, and at the end of the day it's only just a bike race, but of course it's also our job. It's a big part of our life as well. So if we have to be anxious with everybody inside of the peloton and we haven't got any friends or good relationships with other guys, and this big part of your life is already it's played in a bit of sadness. I think it's a good thing. You get along. Of course, some people you get along better with than others. It's normal. You cannot have 180 friends in the bunch. But I think it's a good thing.
And can you describe what it was like on the Poggio for you? Because I was there. I was on site on the finish commentating. And obviously we talked about you, but in the final, we were just talking about the guys right on the very front. But you came through to ultimately win it just on the back of that group. Can you just describe how hard it was on the Poggio staying in? Because, I mean, obviously there's so much to take away from this race about your strength, how well you can climb clearly, how far you can go deep into a race, the fact that you aren't just a sprinter, you are very, very versatile. But still, you're one of the heaviest, bigger guys to get over the Poggio. That must have been, I mean, was it easy? Was it super, super hard? Just tell us, because we didn't see it, because the cameras always at the front. I'd imagine you went through hell to stay with that group.
Yeah,
just describe it.
Yeah, of course, it's really tough. And definitely when Pogačar takes, then you just have to keep on pushing and see what the damage is on top. But I think my luck was also a little bit that at one moment they start to look at each other a little bit after the attack of Tadej, and this was a moment I could rejoin the group as well. But I knew from last year that where I got the experience that you can never, like on Poggio, you just have to keep on pushing from bottom to top and don't hesitate for one moment because it's over before you know. Of course, I had really good legs this day as well. With a couple of good legs, it makes things much more easy. I think one of the best legs I had I ever had. So then that's a good day to have those legs, because those legs you don't have every week. Course, it's also, it's something nice that our coaches, our team, itself as a rider, we can really peak towards these moments. And it's not easy to time this right on the day it has to be. So that was nice.
And can you share with us, perhaps, I don't know if you know off the top of the head, the average power that you had on that climb? Because for you, you would have been a lot more than anybody else because of the extra weight that you would have had to carry over.
Yeah, there are not record numbers because nope. It's also after 280, 260K in the legs. So, of course... you don't have crazy numbers after this distance, and I think everybody's already suffered a little of has these kilometers in the legs, so that's almost impossible. I think you just need to be as fresh as possible and still push good numbers, to get over. But it's not that it's crazy numbers or impossible numbers.
Okay. And what about communicating with Mathieu? I mean, we know. I mean, it always is. In all of the races throughout the year, it's the most exciting 10 minutes in racing. Milan San Remo is a unique race. It's a long race. You have to be very patient as a rider, as a viewer, as a commentator. It's a long, long day, but it all happens in the last few kilometers. But how much actual verbal communication was there between you and Mathieu for him to do what he did? Because, you know, he had to snuff out maybe four or five attacks. The first one from Mohoric. Mm-hmm. On the approach, just like Sturven a couple of years back, he had to work so hard. At what point was the decision made that he was going to ride for you, Jasper? When was that decision, and how did you communicate that, or was it just unspoken?
Yeah, I think the moment that I asked my tuner downhill to not take the front full gas and hesitate for a moment, I could rejoin the group again. This moment, I think he also realized that I was also still feeling good and I was ready to go. I think then also with the moves that happened, that's just something really hard to communicate this move. I think we just know from each other what we have to do and which type of situation to get the chances of winning from the team at the highest, the highest possibilities or probabilities. I think for sure Mach is not a rookie anymore. You have to learn and tell him everything. What he has to do, or the opposite around as well for me. But I think he also realized or felt that he, because it was also still his first race of the season, that he didn't have the best legs like you've seen now in Flanders or in A3 press, where he was really smashing it. Like last year in Sanremo, he was also unbeatable. I think, at this moment, there is not a lot of communication in between, but just a common sense of both of us, I think, to know what to do.
Yeah. And how confident were you coming into the sprint? I mean, you on paper, you were the fastest there. You end up winning it, but it was only only by this. It's enough. A win is a win. It doesn't matter. But how confident were you? Were you maybe a little bit surprised at how quick Michael Matthews was in the sprint? What about the last few hundred meters when you opened up?
Yeah, I feared Pedersen the most, actually.
Okay.
In the last kilometer, I was really thinking if this chance I really have to take. It's maybe my one. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity, maybe. So don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
And then you go to a small heart with a sprint, to the sprint.
Yeah.
And then, I wanted to be in Pedersen's wheel, but Michael Matthews was there. But in the end, was maybe my luck that he was still at really still good legs or good sprinting legs to overtake him. And I could also take his drag a little bit to just beat him on the line. It's a sprint after 300 kilometers is so different. You think you're going to do a great sprint and you haven't feel the legs that much during the day, all day, because the pace obviously is not crazy, only on Poggio or Cipressa. But then the moment you hit the wind, then you think, oh, what is this? I'm like, if I look at my numbers, I was a sprint of amateur, really.
But that's the thing. It's you say that, but yeah, sprinting after 6 or 7 hours riding is very, very different. And also, you know, the fact that you haven't actually ridden hard beforehand as well is quite unusual, isn't it? You've suddenly got to go full gas after 5 or 6 hours of riding relatively easily. You know, it's a really different proposition. But just one other thing, looking at the sprint from above, there's a lot of decisions made in split seconds. You can't even process them, but because you wanted to take the wheel of Pedersen, but you sensed that Matthews was moving quicker, so you switched and went to the left, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I wanted to take his wheel, of course, and he opened up on the left side where I could join him and just also go out of the wind a little bit. And yeah, of course, sprinting, so many things happen and you can ride a sprint 100 ways, but maybe there are multiple ways to win, but there are also multiple ways how to fuck up a sprint or how to lose a sprint. So to make the right decisions, and it's all in a split second.
It's fantastic. I mean, you got it in the end. I mean, held the bike aloft. I mean, can you remember much about that moment? Because winning a monument is such an enormous thing. I mean, can you remember what you felt as you just as you crossed the line when you knew that you got? Well, actually, for a while, we didn't really know who'd won, did we? Actually, they didn't officially announce the result. So there was a couple of, maybe a minute before we didn't really know who'd won.
Yeah, so I also prefer to have a nicer picture and with the hands raised in the air. But Yeah, I had a feeling maybe I was the fastest, but I didn't, or didn't soak in, or didn't realize yet that I'd won the monument. And just when they give the confirmation, then yeah, it was a big relief also. Going off in a big celebration as well. These feelings or emotions, it's hard to describe. I think it's something you work hard for all off season training for this, and then you just trying to be as good and professional as you are, and then you get to opening weekend, you get the hammer in the face by the Jumbo-Visma guys. So you start also doubting yourself and the preparation you did, and then with Tirreno there, knocker course I did, then Sanremo with the legs slightly getting better. Then it's also a relief, a big relief, of course.
And okay, we look at, you've got Chel de Prise on Wednesday, day after tomorrow, and then and Roubaix. What's going to be after Chel de Prise? How are you? How much recon have you done of the course? I mean, obviously it's the same course every year. We know that, but have you done a recon already, or will you go out on Thursday or Friday and do a recon? What would be your run in to Sunday?
Yeah, I'll do the recon on Friday probably. Actually, similar approach every year with the team, but normally the track or the how the parcours is shouldn't be any surprises or for me or for the team. We know it, but of course the circumstances are different. They also speak about rain, maybe.
Yes.
So of course, with raining, it makes also a complete different race. And then it's good to see on Friday, 2 days before, how the track is and which circumstances are there.
What would you prefer, Jasper? Would you prefer a dry Roubaix or a wet Roubaix? Or are you just, it doesn't matter? Or is there any kind of day that you'd prefer? Or is, you don't mind? What would you think? Yeah, difficult one.
A wet Roubaix is iconic and makes for sure some nice pictures. But last year it was actually a really fast Roubaix, I can remember.
Yeah.
One with tailwind as well. So I think also this one should suit me a little bit better. But of course, we have to be ready to race in every circumstances. And the circumstances will be the same for everybody. So.
And can you tell us, it's a simple question. Are you and Mathieu going to be joint leader, or are you running for Mathieu, or will it? Or what is the structure of the team in terms of? Well, firstly, the team need to win the bike race. We know that. If you win, you will emulate Mathieu last year. It did San Remo and Paris-Roubaix. But a primacy is one of you winning, or anybody from the team winning. Mm-hmm. But who is it? Shared leadership for Roubaix.
Shared leadership. I think it's always good for a race like Roubaix to have some cards to play. A race is really unpredictable, with bad luck, with crashes, maybe flat tires, everything that can happen. Groups that are going or whatever. Roubaix is such an unpredictable race, and I think it's good to have two protected riders in a team. We don't really call it leaders, but more protected and trying to get into the final with as many guys possible. Last year was also Gianni Vermeers a long time there, and then I think the race unfolds itself because it's such a hard race, and these people getting dropped or by the legs they have, or the flat tires they have, or whatever. And we just try to get as far as possible inside of the race with as many riders as possible.
I mean, it's not new at all that big sprinters do well or in Roubaix, but after your result last year and runner-up to Mathieu, did that change the way you feel about the classics and about your ability in the classics, or was it something you expected? I mean, because a lot of people, it wasn't a surprise that Mathieu won, of course, but for you to get second, it was like, I think a lot of people, it's fair to say, Jasper, were looking at you in a different light and thinking, mm-hmm. Wow, this man we know is one of the fastest on the planet, but also he could be a classics winner, and you're now Wombeland San Remo. So how important was that second place to you in terms of your psychology and how you think about the classics?
It was always a dream of me. Let it be clear, because I'm a Yeah, Belgian rider. I grew up with the classics as one of the most important parts of the season. So becoming a professional cyclist, you also hope somewhere to be a good classic rider. But of course, I race to my abilities. I don't race like that I hope to be something. I can hope that I become a climber, but I know I don't have the abilities to be a climber. So I think it was a good sign also for myself and a team that we keep on believing and trying to work for it as well. Otherwise, we would have made maybe other choices, going to UAE Tour, Alula Tour, doing these sprint races in the beginning of the season and trying to get as many victories as possible. But this really also changed how we approached this part of the season and focusing as well more on classic focused training instead of sprint focused training.
And when will you actually start to shift the focus towards sprinting for the tour? Is there a distinct change in your training, Jasper, or is it something that you will focus more on in June or something, or in May? Well, when will that training shift? Is it, will you rest after classics and then completely start a new program leading into the tour?
Yes, I think towards the tour we need to just make smaller. It's not a big adjustment, but just small adjustments we have to do. But I will go probably to Tenerife 1 month to prepare the altitude camp, then going to the altitude camp. So I will be climbing a lot as well for the tour because I know Visma, they go full on every climb. So we just have to we just have to get over it as well. And then just some small so the main focus will be the endurance, the climbing. But of course, we have to add a small focus towards sprinting as well, as this will be important for me.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you a few questions about a few years ago, your first tour stage. And before I do that, I want to show you this. Now, did you see the advert? See this?
I've seen it, yes.
So this is, if anybody's like wondering what I'm holding up, this is the Flemish Classic Energy Gel made by Cycling in Flanders. Beef stew... Stouffles. Am I saying that right, Jasper? Stouffles?
Stouffles and frites.
Stouffles mit frites. So it's basically beef stew and frites. Now, I did have a real beef stew last night in Ghent, mate, with chips and a beer. Oh, so, so nice.
Love it.
I wish I could have it every day. It was so nice. But the guys at Flanders have made this gel. You can actually get these. This is real. And I did have it. I had one yesterday in the Bayern Oudenaarde Museum. I had one, and I'm still coming to terms with the taste. I can't quite get my head around how this tasted. Would you be? I mean, I know you can't try it because you're in Belgium and I'm in London now. But what are your initial thoughts? Would you risk trying one in Paris-Roubaix, or do you think you better try it for a rest day?
I would try it for a training ride, that's for sure. But it will eat some cobbles in Paris-Roubaix, but not Flemish stouffles.
Yeah, this is, mate, it's neither sweet or savory. It's something, it's almost something like something from outer space. But oh, I love, I mean.
Would you buy it or not?
Do you know would what? I would, because I don't really, I like energy food as much. My racing days are a long time ago, and I like real food when I'm out training or riding with the team, you know, when I was in Denia. But I would actually have this in a race. It's weird, mate. It's like, you know, sometimes when you're racing and you kind of want sweet things like Haribo or a gel, and then sometimes you want savory things. Mm-hmm. This could be the secret, I think, mate. But anyway, I'll get the guys at Cycling Flanders to send you some, because you should try it.
I will definitely. I will try it. Yes.
I mean, as a proud Belgian, mate, why do you? Actually, it's more of a general question. People ask me, well, what's it like going to see the Tour of Flanders and just hanging out in Flanders, and I say it is. It's the essence of cycling, really. Of course, the Giro I love, Italy, France, of course, the Netherlands, but Belgium is real. It really is in people's blood, isn't it? Can you just explain how important cycling is to the Belgian people, and being somebody as proud yourself, mate? Just, it's always lovely to hear it coming from a Belgian. Just explain why cycling is so important to everybody in Belgium.
It's culture, I think. Yes, it's the history. It's like last Sunday, I think almost all people I know, they're just watching television all day or being at the parkour, just watch the race. So, of course, it's also head news in Belgium. That is Flanders that day, and yeah, just the atmosphere you see on the Oude Quaremont, for example, with the VIP tents. Of course, you have also some drunk people throwing beer, but that's maybe the downside of it. But I think everybody's enjoying the race and just cycling in general. It's one of the main sports in Belgium. Where we have we had the champions before, we have them now as well. So I think it's really in our blood and in the legs.
Do you think there's a little bit of extra pressure being one of the next big Belgian riders? You know, especially to you've won Milan San Remo. Obviously, you want to win a Belgian monument or a French monument. Essentially, Roubaix is like a hybrid, really, isn't it? It's in France, but essentially, it's loved by the Belgians. It's loved by everybody, really. But do you feel any additional pressure because of how high profile cycling is in Belgium?
There is always pressure, I think, but mainly the pressure you put on yourself. But I think from outside from the Belgian perspective, we have multiple really strong riders at the moment to also share the pressure. There is Wout van Aert, there is Remco Evenepoel, you have Arnaud Lee, for example. So and even other guys, Jordi Meus winning on Champs-Élysées last year. So of course we have really strong Belgian riders, and I think it's good to also share. We don't have like really one big champion. Of course, Wout and Remco, they are the main champions in Belgium, but it's good there is a shared they can share their pressure a little bit. I think it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and what about, well, actually let's talk about the Tour de France a little bit, where you made your name, and even more so now with the Netflix series. You know, we can't don't really want to talk about that so much, but it just elevates everybody's profile even more, especially yours. It's such an interesting tale. But can you just describe to me what it was like winning that first stage in Carcassonne a couple of years ago? Your first, obviously you've won a lot of bike races before then. You'd already won stages in the Vuelta, but that really hot day, that day was so hot first. It was like riding in an oven. Yeah. I was there on the finish line sweating, but you took the win there. Just describe what that was like for you. Do you still think about that win a little bit, or just describe what it was like?
Yeah, of course, the Tour is different. The Tour is different than any other bike race. This is a bike race you dream of, and really the bike race you want to also win, like win a stage as a sprinter. Then you can really put yourself on a list of the top sprinters as well. And I was chasing it for a long time, actually, already being close many times as well. So it was actually also a relief and big emotions coming off my shoulders as well to get the stage win. And definitely it was a build up from, I think it was stage 17 or something in the Tour, or 15. So
yeah, 15, you've been, I think, already, it's 15. Yeah,
yeah, 15. Yeah, yeah, so. Been racing already more than 2 weeks without win, without a success for the team. So I think all these things made it an emotional one. But that's also nice. That's what sport is, emotion a lot of times. So that was just a cool moment.
Yeah. And how would you describe yourself, Jasper? Because, you know, we think we get to know you through what we see in the races, interviews, and then what we see in that famous documentary. But how would you describe yourself? Are you quite an emotional rider, or do you think, how would you describe yourself? Are you quite a logical sprinter rider, or are you quite driven by emotion? How would you describe yourself?
It's hard to say. Of course, we're human and we all have emotions. But you also try to make logical decisions, and also, how can I say, that at the end of the day is just a bike race, and there is much more in life as well to try to enjoy. But of course, it's such a big part of your life, going to train, missing some social nice moment with other people, just for you working to be trying to be the best cyclist as you can be. So of course it's more than a job itself, it's a lifestyle. I think that makes it sometimes hard to relativate some things, because it's you're so deep into your job. But I'm also looking forward to off season and completely switch off these things, where at the end of the day then I'm not really actually following cyclocross or whatever, and I have not a lot of interest for it. Okay. But when you're just getting into this job completely, and you get more emotional involved as well.
And how do you cope with the pressure in clearly big pressure situation? I mean, that first stage win, as you said, if you look back to the Tour de France the previous year, I think you were in the top three six times, weren't you, in the previous year? Mm-hmm. You know, three mm-hmm. times third, three times second, something like that. And then you went on to win, but it was 2 weeks. Do you think you find energy from the pressure? Do you like the pressure? Or is it something that you just find you can deal with? I mean, because as a sprinter, you have to be able to deal with pressure. Otherwise, you couldn't do what you do. But do you actually like the pressure?
Like the pressure. That's hard to say, I think. I think the pressure that comes really from myself, but not from the media or people expecting something. Because, at the end of the day, you just do it or you don't do it, or you fade away, or you're getting the job done. And of course, you have the goals and ambitions to make this come true. But if it's not, you cannot. Okay, you do 100% your best, and you're trying to do it as good as you can. But if you don't have the abilities at the end, or somebody is stronger than you, just accept it and you go on. I don't think, of course, we all want to win, but there can only be one winner, and you're trying to do 100% your best, but you cannot do more than your best. So that's just how it is.
Yeah. And the level of sprinting at the moment, although you are one of the dominant sprinters, and I say there's not a dominant sprinter, I was just looking at your results from last year. I didn't really need reminding, but you had 19 wins, wasn't it? It was 19, wasn't mm-hmm. it? Which is, impressive of any generation of riders. That is ridiculously impressive. But saying that, just within your team, you have four or five guys, very good sprinters. And then across the actual quality of sprinting in this era now is amazing, isn't it? The depth of it. And as you say, even if everybody's at 100% form, especially in the Tour de France, there's only room for one winner, isn't there? And it must, 100%. I mean, the level is just, I mean, just describe what it's like riding in the Tour with so many good sprinters battling it out, so many teams wanting that space on the road. I mean, what is that like?
It's tough sometimes because, everybody's such a good form. You have to really trust your teammates, trying to use every part of the road to get into position. And try to time it right with the team. But that makes it really hard when everybody's at his best shape possible. And that's what it is in the Tour de France. Everybody did probably altitude camps. Everybody did preparations with the team. They looked at the finish line. They did recon of the race. They know what's coming. So that makes it hard, and as you said, there can only be one winner. At the moment, like last year, was going really well. I was able to race 19 times the hands in the air, but of course, it's not every year will not happen like this. You just bike races also sometimes need to have some good luck. Trying to make the right decisions, trying to stay out of trouble from crashes or whatever. See, like a good example, like Van Aert now, where he focused such a long time on these two big races, from Sunday and next Sunday, and then one crash, and you have to completely reset and making new goals. Yeah. So yeah, it's difficult to say, but yeah, it's not 100% logical, and you just have to adapt to the situations and trying to just do your best, and then trying to be in best shape you can be and trying to do as good job as possible with the team, and then of course sooner or later results will follow, but you cannot say it will be 19 times or maybe only one time. But eventually, if you work hard, the success will be there.
Yeah. And just, I know Mathieu wasn't involved in all 19 of your wins, but just in terms of his ability in the lead out, and we know how important it is having, firstly, riders that are strong in the lead out, riders that can ride in the wind, riders that can drop you off at the right place, you know, riders who can carry a lot of speed for a long time, riders who can make a difference, riders who can create space, which is important in a sprint, isn't it? You know, but Mathieu is somebody that some of the wins that he delivered you to, I mean, you had to finish it off, mate, but you know, the ability that he has, he does make a big difference in the sprint, some of the sprints that you've been involved in, especially at the Tour.
Of course.
Just describe what that's like, having that extra ability, because he can do some special things on a bike, that guy, Connie.
Yeah, 100%. He knows how to handle his bike. Yeah, he 99% out of the times, he don't make a mistake where he crashes or whatever. It all goes by itself with him. And, you know, some people would already be on the limit, and then you hope that they can do an extra pull in the wind or whatever, or create some space. And with Mathieu, he does it. And he does even an extra thing you didn't expect anymore. So, yeah, that's just the power or the ability he has. Yeah, it's from world class. And, yeah, of course, he's also not, he can do his job as a lead out, but yeah, that's not his sole capabilities that he has. Yeah. So he's just having all his capabilities on the bike like almost nobody has. So that's why he's also one of the biggest champions cycling.
And what do you think is the most important thing in a lead out for you? I mean, let's take Mathieu out of the equation because he does make a big difference. But coming into a Tour stage or any bunch sprint, like on potentially on at Shell the Priest, what's the ingredients, before? If you were telling somebody who didn't really understand too much about cycling, for what's the ingredients for a perfect sprint and a perfect lead out? What does there need to be? An element of luck, of course, that's always a factor. But what is the perfect recipe or the ideal recipe for a lead out in your opinion?
I think a good lead out, makes you calm as well as a sprinter, where you can sit in the wheel of somebody you trust. You don't have to talk to him. He knows what he has to do, or follow his teammates in front and direct them also a little bit, and then just time things right. I think the timing is maybe already 95% of the job, to take the wind at the right moment, to move up at the right moment, to have this process of being a sprinter, riding to the sprint. And then of course the ideal situation if he really can raise up the speed and take the front and deliver you at 200 meters towards the finish line. But of course it will not happen like this all the time. But if a good lead out or a good lead out train already delivers you in the right position to sprint without using already energy you have spent before, and you still have the capability to make a good sprint. And of course, that's already a big win, I think. Big team success.
Okay.
Then you for sure need to have the legs to deliver it off as well. But
yeah.
But I think, let's say, timing, team tactics, whatever, is already 95% the job.
Yeah. And just looking back over the last few years, I mean, you only just turned 26. It was your birthday just to couple of days ago, a month ago or so, in early March.
A month ago.
What do you think, apart from your natural progression physically, what's the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself, do you think? I mean, you're getting better and better. The results are coming. This is a natural process, I guess. But mm-hmm. is there something you can really identify that you've learned about it yourself that you're actually putting into action in racing?
Yeah, I think losing, just lose. I've been second a lot of times. And I hate to lose. So you're trying to analyze everything that went wrong. I think this is the greatest lesson you can have is to lose as many times as possible when you're young, and then trying to reflect on it. How can I do it better, or what I did wrong, and how could I have won with the same legs? Trying to analyze and doing as many sprints as possible. Maybe already did more than 100 sprints, and every sprint is not the same. You're trying to create the right decisions. And by sprinting more, you get I think you can just getting better at making the right decisions at the particular times.
And as you look forward, what do you want to achieve? What do you want your legacy to be? Do you think, Jasper? What would you like to achieve over the next few years? What would be something? I mean, already you have you've amassed an amazing palmarès, haven't you? You know, multiple wins in Grand Tours, of course. Now a monument. What would you like to look back on?
Yeah, I'm not really the type of rider that really wants to achieve this before quitting. I'm just a guy, I think, trying to give my best and doing my best as long as I'm racing, and trying to win as much as possible if it in either race it is, because I just like to win where I participate. Of course you have the big monuments in mind and the world championships and all these big races you want to win or you want to achieve, as these are the highest possible things you can achieve as a rider. But if I would never win, then I would also not, I would still be happy at the end of the day. I think it's important that you cannot look back at the career and say, I haven't won this or I haven't won that. You're just trying to win as much as possible and trying to see how it goes. And then you cannot win everything. I cannot win everything. Maybe some other guys they can, but I know what I can, and I also know what I cannot.
Yeah, of course. I mean, before I let you go, you've gone slightly over, and I really appreciate your time. You talked about you're at home. You like to switch off. You don't want to do the cyclocross. But just tell us how does Jasper Philipsen like to relax? What don't we know about you that you can tell us in terms of the other side of your life? What do you like to do to take your mind off cycling, mate? What are you into?
I think like every cyclist, I like to eat good. I would say the love of the men goes through the stomach. We stay in Belgium.
Well, Jasper, thank you so much for your time. Want to wish you all the very best.
Sorry if the connection is...
For Paris-Roubaix and the rest of the season. Hopefully our paths will cross.
You hear me?
I don't even want you to say goodbye. I just want you to just leave it at that, if that's okay. So no, stop it. Just thanks very much indeed.
Yes.
All the very best. Niall, can you turn it off now?
Sorry, Matt.
Well, that was a hugely enjoyable chat, but you might have noticed a rather abrupt ending there. Now, it was actually because Jasper lost connection. I didn't actually shush him into submission, and we didn't even have time for his hometown quiz, but we'll have to do that next time. Thanks so much to Jasper, and I can't wait to see how he gets on at the weekend. This podcast was produced by Noel Gaffney on behalf of Hot Chili. Thanks to Pirate App Gwyneth for the podcast theme tune, and thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe and rate the pod, and why not recommend it to anybody who's looking for a savoury gel that tastes like a dinner in a tube, but also has a jarring sweetness to keep you on your toes. Cheers all, stay safe, and goodbye.